Who likes to talk about temptation? Who likes to even deal or admit that they are tempted? And yet, year after year, and not only once a year, we insist that it is crucial for us to spend time hosting and reflecting and wrestling with temptation. It has to do with the emphasis and the priority and the importance that the Bible gives to it. It doesn't quite agree with Oscar Wilde that the only way to deal with temptation is to yield to it. But what it does is to say that there's something particularly gifting about temptation, that we would do well to spend time reflecting on it in our lives as individuals and as community. The story in Luke provides such an opportunity to do that, to look in and to peer back and peel back the layers of possibility that are there for us as a community of faith and for us as individuals, followers of Jesus. Jesus has been approved, as it were, and affirmed as a beloved son in his baptismal experience with John the Baptist. It is the Spirit of God, and this is something we need to pay attention to. It is the Spirit of God that leads him. In another gospel, it says, drives him into the wilderness, into that place of discovery. It is not an accident, because Jesus is about to embark on the most important maneuver of God for the well-being of the world. And it is necessary that he gets it right, or more accurately, that he gets it according to God's will. If we are to respect the humanity of Jesus, and we see this coming out in the story, and this is something about which the Bible does not shy away, we are to appreciate and to say that this is not some sham, some straw temptation that, oh, we all know, well, he's God in human form, so it wasn't any big deal. For the text says very early on that in the wilderness he did not eat anything, and it says he was hungry. That is a human reality. Some of the starkness of that imagination and that picture could be recalled to mind just by the events of recent times in our world. Just a week and a half ago, I believe it was, someone had emerged from the rubble, we're told. After 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks in Haiti, those that were pulled even 2 weeks out after, the emaciated form and the weakness of not having any food. It is a stark picture in our mind to think about 40 days without food, to think of a protracted period. And we know that when we are hungry, really a more complete word, famished, then we are vulnerable. But it was necessary. It was necessary because there's something about the wilderness experience and temptation that opens up the truth, that reveals things that are not otherwise revealed in your life and in mine, in the life of our world. Robert McFarland, in his book Wild Places, he decided that he wanted an experience of wilderness, and that in the British Isles, many of the places had been industrialized and built up, so he wanted to go to an extreme location in the Scottish mountains and the top of the Welsh hills. And in his book, he writes this observation: my early vision of a wild place as somewhere remote, history-less, unmarked, now seemed improperly partial. I had learned to see another type of wildness to which I had once been blind. The wildness of natural life, the sheer force of ongoing organic existence, vigorous and chaotic. The weed in the crack of the pavement was a wild sign. His point is that he came back from such an experience to reflect on how wildness and wilderness is part and parcel of everyday living. We don't have to go to a remote area to experience it. And indeed, as we see the drama played out in the temptations that Jesus resists, it speaks to our hearts and our souls where we are tempted to misconstrue our relationship with God, to believe that we have to somehow perform at a certain level in order to win approval, which in itself separates us from God. It was Robert McCabe, who said that sin is the fear of feeling like you are nothing. What we begin to discover, as in Jesus' own experience, is that wilderness for us doesn't have to be a remote place. Wilderness comes unbidden way too often. I experienced with a family just yesterday wilderness in its ugliest form, and it has dampened my spirit, kindled urgent prayer, caused tears to flow. A couple from our own congregation was involved in a very serious accident. Joe Sayers and Bev Sunday, three small children. Fortunately, they were not in the car, but they are in serious condition in a hospital in Hull. I spent much of the morning yesterday with the mother of Joe and family members who are gathered, sitting vigil and praying, hoping. Wilderness comes unbidden, the visit to the doctor and a disclosure of a diagnosis you had not expected. A call from a faraway place that disturbs your life. A discovery that you have been in the wrong program and course of study, and a realization you're only doing this because your parents expected it. A job that no longer renders you meaning, and you realize that you weren't even supposed to be in this. You've been compromising and giving in to your heart and soul's desire for a long time. Wilderness comes in all kinds of ways. For the wild places of our lives are those places where we discover that we could live or die, that we are lost, maybe found, we don't know. Those wild places are occasions for us to be tempted. Tempted to reach again, for the pacifier that gets us through those brief moments of clarity. Lent is an invitation for us to put aside our pacifiers, to put aside those things we choose to numb the pain, to the reality of what's really going on in us and what we are called to be and to do. We all have them. We cannot find a moment in the day when we don't want to do something. The silence is too loud. The inactivity is too oppressive. So we Facebook and we text and we phone and we PVR and we watch our favorite shows and we call someone. We go shopping, retail therapy. We do whatever pacifier of choice will render us numb. The wilderness is an experience of fissure that creates a crack and momentarily perhaps destabilizes us from grasping for that pacifier. And if we would allow it, if we would stay and trust God's accompaniment in it to help us through that, despite the temptations to reach out and to push it away, we would discover over time something deep within us, the most deep and profound truth that we are not alone, that we are beloved of God, that we do not have to perform in order to be accepted by God, that we need not fear the things that we have feared all our lives. and thereby perhaps gifted with the strength and the affirmation and the grace needed to push back against the numbing realities of our lives that cause us to live out of sync with our true selves and with the will of God. Sometimes it seems it's only suffering and inconvenience that makes those cracks possible. You hear people making outlandish statements, what seemingly outlandish, after having gone through a bottoming out experience, a world turning upside down experience. That was the best thing that happened to me, they say. That cancer changed my life for the better. That final admission that I was an addict and the path to recovery and the support of others around me was the best thing that happened. Sometimes it is the wilderness that gets to the truth, if we would allow it. And the Bible is full of those opportunities, for it took 40 days for Moses to experience that disclosure of God's will and commandments on the mountain. It took 40 days for Elijah to finally, after all of the cacophony of noises and excuses in his head and in his life, to finally hear the still small voice of God. It took 40 years for the people of Israel to wander, to find their way in the direction amidst the mumbling and the grumbling and the complaining and the disobedience, to find their way. It is that protracted time of wildness that discloses to us those temptations in the midst of that wildness that reveals who we are. And most importantly, whose we are. We are God's. It is interesting that Jesus was confronted with such temptation, a temptation to check if he really understood not only the will of God, his relationship with God, and what he was called to do. Just briefly, the temptations may seem very innocent, but they have profound layers of significance. Just turn these stones into bread, simple enough. But this is about clarifying his mission. How was he going to convey and enact and embody the will of God for the kingdom-making task ahead of him? He was being tempted to startle the people with magic. Just dazzle them. Turn stones into bread. Feed them. Feed everybody. You'll be popular. But they will have missed the point. All these kingdoms. Wouldn't you like to rule instead of the Roman Empire? Wouldn't you like to be king of the whole world? Wouldn't you like to be religiously popular also and replace all the temple activities with your own religious program? Those are the temptations. How am I going to communicate the servant, graceful life and power of God? You see, the way we are made, contrary to the Enlightenment period and the time of rational thinking, we are not atoms, individual marbles of lives that live and occasionally reach out and connect to someone. Ourselves are formed by the community and experiences we have. We are built for human family. We are not individuals. And so our relationship with each other is impacted by the choices we make. And in the Christian context, in the religious context, it is our relationship with God that determines how we're going to relate to others. So if Jesus got that part wrong, his relationships with other humans and the systems was going to be compromised. So the fundamental invitation and the fundamental temptation that this tempter comes to Jesus with is to misconstrue his relationship with God, is to see himself replace his own good ideas for the will of God. Because if the tempter could accomplish that, then the rest would collapse. And so this Lenten time is an invitation for us again, not so much to be focusing on little things we do to just tick off another experience of Lent. I gave up desserts. I gave up television. Oh, well, except for the Olympics, God will understand. I gave up smoking. I gave up. What is the purpose? What is the purpose of this Lenten time? This Lenten season is intended for us to peel back and open our hearts, not only to our true selves, to the deepest truth that God has come near to us and is ever present, that we are not alone. And sometimes it takes suffering to do that. In his book, God and Human Suffering, John Douglas Hall, professor emeritus at McGill University, writes and talks about two different types of suffering. He talks about integrative suffering and destructive suffering. Don't be distracted by the fancy words. The integrative suffering has four particular features, and he says it is this kind of suffering that helps us speak the truth to ourselves and have the truth of God spoken into our lives. It is loneliness. If we can stay with the loneliness and not numb it. And I'm not talking about protracted loneliness, because that is harmful and harsh. We do need community. But loneliness, experiencing in loneliness, experiencing anxiety, and experiencing an opportunity for us to recognize our limits. We are convinced, much of our world attempts to convince us, there are no limits, the sky is the limit. But we are limited. And it is that finiteness that helps us realize that there are greater things beyond our control to which we relate and can only receive as gift from God. And the fourth is temptation. So suffering, this integrative suffering, allows us to spend time in these movements so that truth may be opened up to us. What pacifier are you willing to defer, to put aside, in order that you stay in the uncomfortable place of facing yourself and who you really are? The good and the bad. Just look at what you are and who you are. But when you look, realize that you are being assisted, all of us are being assisted to do that kind of looking in the gracious embrace of God. Did you hear what the choir sang? And God will raise you up and hold you in God's hands. So we never do that investigation alone. We never do it condemned. We do it as an invitation to life. And the temptations that we have in our lives, in our hearts, reveal who we are, what direction we're going in, whether or not we are about what God has called us to. And remember that the temptations move in both directions. We are also tempted to do good things. We are tempted to live holy lives. We are tempted to be generous and tempted to be forgiving. And sometimes we yield to those temptations, and other times we don't. But temptations of all kinds, the positive and the not so positive, reveal many things to us. My prayer is that as you and I move through this season of Lent, we would help to sustain each other in prayer, to tell the truth to ourselves, and to receive the truth from God. Jesus provided an opportunity for us to choose to stay in the wilderness. Don't run away too quickly. Stay in those uncomfortable places where the truth of who you are becomes apparent, and then you live into it by the grace of God. As I said before, whether you are facing illness, job loss, heartache, and pain, the awareness that you are in the wrong profession, loss of effectiveness, or feeling like you're important in retired years, whatever it is, allow the suitable discomfort necessary to realize that your life is dependent on God. And all the things that you and I thought we were in control of have been suddenly revealed that we are not. But what is the truth of our entire existence is that it is God who is in control. Temptation revelations. What will we discover this season?